Hello, hello, everybody. Welcome back. Another episode of Bootstrap Web. I'm Jordan.
I am Brian.
What's up, Brian?
Not much. Just digging out of some snow over here in the Northeast. And yeah.
Oh, yeah. Right. I didn't realize it's 65 and sunny here in Portland. So.
Yeah, of course. I did just book a trip. My family, we're going to be heading out west to California and then up through Oregon, stopping through Portland. So.
All right. Very nice. Like over the summer?
Yeah, in June. I think we're just going to be in Portland for like one night.
All right. Well, we'll get together. We didn't record last week. I think it was my fault. I think it was me basically saying I am not emotionally prepared to talk in public.
Well, you know, it's funny because I think I'm that person today.
Good for you for doing it anyway.
But we're recording anyway.
I genuinely was not comfortable with what was going to come out of my mouth last time. That's the main thing I have to talk about today.
I got two things. One is this week I ran a very limited kind of experiment to run completely cold paid traffic to a webinar to sell the productized course. And so that webinar happened yesterday. Today is Friday. The webinar was yesterday, Thursday, selling the course through this Sunday, and then it'll be closed again. My general audience didn't really see that. It was only to new people. So that's kind of interesting. The thing that's been kind of driving me in circles this past week is just doing a lot of customer research around Ops Calendar and what direction I want to go on that sort of product front. I don't really have a lot of answers to talk about today, but I can talk a bit about what I'm doing to get myself out of my own head and talking to customers. So yeah, that's it. What about you?
Okay. Well, let's get into a little bit. So the past few months, we have been working on version 2 of our platform. We originally built it in Angular, which helped get it off the ground a little sooner. It turns out that was not the right tech to build it on because it was compromising speed and it was also compromising tracking simplicity. So our product, right, used by e-commerce stores, not exclusively, but almost exclusively, our user base uses paid traffic to drive leads and to drive sales. So tracking is hugely, hugely important. So Angular affected both of those things, the speed of the checkout and the tracking. So those are like two of the most critical things of the entire product. So we made the decision back in September to do it, to basically rewrite the underlying infrastructure and move it over to Laravel. So it's just loading, you know, straight HTML and CSS. That project dragged on for a lot longer than we expected. It was a lot more complicated than we expected, which we should have expected.
It always is.
Always.
And I learned that the hard way again and again and again.
Yes. And so we got ourselves into a rough spot because we were building version 2. And because of that, a lot of the features that we had planned, we didn't release because it didn't make any sense to write them on version 1 and then have to rewrite them for version 2. So that made sense to me. What I didn't anticipate is that the project would take longer than expected. So we went through a few months of really not releasing any real features that people wanted. And that affected churn and affected overall satisfaction. And so the whole company, we were getting pretty antsy. So we worked everything to this release of version 2. And that happened 2 weeks ago. We released it on a Thursday. We immediately see the conversion rates jump up by 5%, like immediately, like the next hour. And we're like, oh my God, here we go. We, you know, it was all worth it. And this is just going to bring better performance. And we see people are, you know, doing well with our product and paying us. And now this is just literally overnight increasing their performance. We're just so excited. So we're starting to high five each other virtually. And then Saturday comes around and we start getting reports of, guys, what's going on with my tracking? And then an avalanche of, whoa, what happened to my tracking?
Yeah. Well, you know, the internet turns off on weekends. You know that.
Well, I mean, so. E-commerce does not, right? You don't right. Stop your Facebook ads on a Saturday. You keep going, but our employees don't work on Saturday. And so what had happened was that I won't get too geeky because I can't, but my layman's understanding of it is that Angular keeps the pages persistent. So between the checkout, upsell, and thank you pages, it doesn't actually refresh to a new page. So we were doing some weird magic with tracking and scripts firing and API calls and so on. And when we switched over to Laravel, the pages were fully refreshing. And so what was happening was that the API calls were getting terminated before reaching their destination because the page would load, the next page would load. So we literally went from too slow to too fast, which is ironic, but it blew up everybody's tracking. We tried, we tested it, everything, but we missed a few things. So we had to revert back to version one. Super painful, pissed off everybody, and especially our most important, biggest customers who use a lot of advanced scripts and custom scripts and so on. But we had no choice. That was the right move. So we revert back, and we have been reverted back to version one for the past week. And now we're finally re-releasing version two on Monday. So it was, at first, it was unbelievably frustrating because, you know, I felt like we should have caught things and it shouldn't have happened and we should have communicated better and everything. I was very, very unhappy. I was at my max frustration, you know? And of course, where am I when this happens? At a conference.
Of course.
I'm in San Diego. Exactly. I'm in San Diego for a conference. This has happened like three times when I'm away at conferences for some weird reason. So I'm at a conference and I'm looking at an ocean of opportunity in front of me, right? Potential agency partners, potential customers, learning things. And I'm on my laptop, man. I'm taking care of biz. I'm making sure people have what they need and communicating and emailing customers and so on. And I was very, very unhappy. But then something amazing happened. The team reacted in such a way that I don't know how to describe it. It showed me where they were as a team and in their knowledge and so on. And everyone just got down to business, got serious, and started communicating, right? I had like one stand-up where I just kind of expressed my frustration and gave some marching orders, that type of thing. And then I just disappeared. I just did not insert myself into conversations at all. And they just flourished, man. They just did their thing and they created documents and they communicated together and they set things up and they organized. And I was like, holy shit, I have a real company that doesn't need me.
And it's like you have to go through these fallouts once in a while for everybody to experience that pain. Not just you experience that pain, but everyone on the team. They know that it's probably not an individual's fault, but it's like the team as a whole dropped some sort of ball, probably several balls somewhere.
Exactly. It's like, everybody.
So now it's like everybody's motivated to make sure this doesn't happen again.
Yep. Right? Yep. And I made sure that the team knew and felt that this is not a mistake by the engineers. This is everybody. Because if success had communicated better, then people would have expected a bigger thing with potential for danger. If support had done better to document it, and if product had done better to coordinate things, and if engineering had done more, it's everybody. Nobody walks away saying, "Well, somebody screwed up." It was an amazing thing. It was brutal, but we kind of like went through a battle together. And then all this week, everyone's just like in this great mood. Because we like came together through this experience. And now I just really want everyone to see the rewards of it. And I just am really, really hoping for Monday to go smooth and the conversion rates to go up and then to see the MRR climb because of it. I'm just like, the team like deserves to feel the win from that experience. So it was rough, but it's very exciting at the same time.
Yeah. Wow. Crazy.
It was a trip.
Yeah, I bet.
We have hundreds and hundreds of customers and, you know, several thousand orders every day. And it's just pressure and everyone feels it. So, you know, it's like support tickets aren't, "Hey, this button doesn't work." Support tickets are like, "You just cost me $10,000.
Yeah. As I said this week, I've been going through a lot of these like questions around what to do with the product and where to focus. And it's like, thinking through the whole question of like service businesses versus software businesses versus training product businesses, a lot of people look to the software, the SaaS model is like, oh, like you free yourself of all the headaches that come with client services, you know? Everyone's got some version of that. Like even customers who are paying, you know, just a couple $100 a month or less, like there's still going to be fires to put out and complaints and, you know, maybe it coming in a different form and a different way to deal with it. But it's not always like the grass is greener on the other side for those looking to transition from one model to a different model. There's pros and cons of everything. And in terms of like the day-to-day enjoyment of running that business, you know,
almost every business is going to have that. Like you just have to talk to people. And we always talk about, right, like Patrick McKenzie's mantra of charge more. The more you charge, the higher the expectations.
Well, like when the price point is low and something goes wrong or multiple things go wrong for a customer, they're just going to cancel. You know, they might send a question or two or a complaint or get a refund or something. But and that's not the end of the world. But when the price point is high, like they don't just cancel. They've got a fire that you need to put out. You got to make this work. You got to make it right, you know?
Yeah. And they deserve that attention.
And they deserve that attention. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, when I get into sales conversations and the person I'm talking with just asks me very, very matter-of-factly, you know, then they say, look, your competitor's $37 a month. You're telling me now that you want me to pay you $2,000 a month. I need to understand the reason. And that answer is almost exclusively focused on the team and the service.
Yeah, the attention.
Right. The attention, right? And we say, look, you're doing a launch on a Saturday. You're going to make $500,000 in a launch on a Saturday. You let us know ahead of time. You'll have an engineer support person on call on a Saturday. And that's what you pay for. Because if something goes wrong with that launch, it's going to cost you $100,000, right? And if no one's there to answer you, you're out of luck. If you pay someone $37 a month, they can't service you. And it's like, oh, also the software is better because we have more people, blah, blah, blah. But that's not actually the answer.
Yep. It's a funny game.
Yeah. The thing I've gotten worried about lately, and I've been thinking more and more about is the fact that at some point we kind of have to choose between enterprise and not. Because we have this huge range of $300 a month up to thousands of dollars a month. And those customers currently are being treated the same. So if someone has a real issue, yeah, we have what we call VIPs, right? And we have them tagged in front. So whenever something comes in, everyone knows it's a VIP that's asking a question and so on. But we pretty much treat everyone the same. And that can't really last. We either have to treat everyone the same and charge in the hundreds or treat everyone the same and charge in the thousands. So it's kind of something on the horizon that I see as, all right, at some point, gonna have to choose one direction.
We were just talking about this in my mastermind group this week about like, the closer you can get your product to the dollar, to the business's ability to make money, the more essential your product becomes, right? They can't or they don't want to just cancel. It's not the first to go in their list of SaaS when they're canceling SaaS, but more is on the line and more fires to put out if things go wrong and all that. So
yeah, well, was it Jason Cohen or maybe Rob Walling that came out with like a, here's the perfect SaaS business, like how to build the perfect SaaS business. I think it was Jason Cohen. And one of the points was be really valuable, but not middle of the night critical.
Yeah. Right.
Otherwise, yeah. You're setting yourself up for those.
Yeah. And I was talking to my master, like you're in the e-commerce space and I'm not really, like my customers and my audience are not exclusively e-commerce folks. And I feel like in the e-commerce world, there almost everything is very close to the dollar. Right? Every kind of product or service around e-commerce is to help you sell more units.
It does always lead up to that. But like our mantra and the critical piece that we have to focus on is that we never want to get in the way of a customer giving our merchant money. So not many apps and not many services actually will prevent someone from being able to give you money. Whereas if we screw up, we do. So that's where we try to kind of focus on. Like we have an oh shit button in our app that if anything goes wrong, you just click a button and it turns everything off and sends it to the Shopify checkout. Right? For that Saturday 2 a.m. call and someone's freaking out, you can just say, hit that button and we will fix it, but hit that button so no one is prevented from buying.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
What's going on your
end? So I guess kind of real quick is the on the productized front, I ran this. I wanted to see if I can run cold traffic straight to a webinar and then sell the productized course. Like I do have funnels and automation for my audience. It's not an automated launch thing. I do actually do it live now every once in a while to my audience. And this webinar was live as well. But my goal for this one was to just run Facebook ads to cold audiences, not retargeting, not email subscribers. So I excluded email subscribers and I ran ads for, I guess it was like 3.5 days, like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday ads. And then the webinar was this Thursday, which was yesterday. And then the cart is open now up until this Sunday to buy productize. As of now, it has not paid for itself. I got 60 people to register for the webinar. It's like a totally new funnel. So I don't know if I'm happy or not with that. I kind of think that like for a first run of this, I'm not so disappointed with that number.
How much are you paying per registrant?
Around like $25, $30. Higher than I will want ultimately, but for a first run, I'm not so disappointed.
Yeah. I mean, I'd say the goal is like, you know, $8 to $12.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. And how much is the product itself?
Two options. One is $497, one is $797.
Okay. I mean, that's the model that I see a lot these days is webinar to a questionnaire. And then the questionnaire is a qualifier for a sales call. And then people try to sell anywhere between like $1,000 to $5,000.
Yeah, I've seen that too. I don't want to go much higher on these prices because I don't want to do that sort of sales process for productize. It's intended to be a more of a passive product. So it sold one yesterday and we've got a couple more days of this promotion, a couple more emails that will go out over the next few days. So if we sell a couple more, it'll more than break even. I'm happy with like the data that I was able to get from this first run so that like the next time I do it, I'll be able to optimize. I've already figured out like, cause I ran like a lot of A/B tests on these ads. Like I had some were like video ads, some were just an image, some were lead ads, like Facebook lead form ads, some were went to a landing page. I targeted like 4 or 5 different targeting groups. So I've got a lot of data to work with on the next time around. The next kind of thing that I've been working on is just more of that like preliminary lead magnet that I can run ongoing ads to. So I'll run cold ads to just a few blog articles, which go to a free crash course. And then that will just run ongoing. And then periodically when I run the webinar launch, those prospects will be more ready to join live. And I got like about, was it like 15 or so people out of that 60 to attend live. Again, these are like completely new people who haven't been in my audience. Not a huge number, but you know, to see how this could work for a cold audience, I was not so disappointed with that.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. 15 total strangers to show up live is really interesting.
Yeah.
If you can get that conversion rate up.
Yeah. And then, you know, there's the replay that's available for the next like 2 days. And so we'll see.
Yeah. What's the math on that little mini experiment, right? If you get 15 people there, if you can close 30%, I guess you can kind of work your way up to that. I know it's not, it can't be that high up front, maybe 20%. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, if I can basically sell 3 copies of the productized course, this is profitable.
Right. 3 copies at like average of $600. That's $1,800. You're going to get the registration down. I love the math plays where you're like, all right, I'm just going to see if it works and see if I can get that down and this up. And if it works, just keep doing it. It's definitely not easy to get it to work, but
yeah. And I worked really hard on just setting up automation so that every time I run one of these webinars, I don't have to go through the whole process of like queuing up all the emails and stuff. Like I've got the system down. I just need to kind of pick a date on the calendar and then everything else basically runs.
That's nice. You have it all set up in Drip?
Drip, yeah.
Does Drip allow for export of funnels like that? I mean, that's so valuable.
Yeah, well, so a lot of it I built off of Brennan's teachings on that kind of stuff. I tweaked some things, but I've emailed Drip support about this multiple times. But the one thing that I really wish they would just add is having a date-based event in a workflow. You know,
as opposed to a trigger.
Yeah, like just like somebody's going through the workflow, stop until you get to April 24th and then continue.
I see, instead of it being relative to the previous step.
Yeah, because then I could run a whole live webinar around April 24th, you know, and have emails that go out 2 days after April 24th, you know, stuff like that. But I kind of do that with Drip, but it's a lot of really technical hacky workarounds to make that work.
Yeah, we've been banging our heads around it the past few weeks too. We're doing a webinar on Wednesday with an integration partner, and we moved the date once to be after the release because it was scheduled for last week, and making all those changes and yeah, it's different campaigns, different automations, different triggers, different broadcast emails. It's like that's a lot. It makes it hard to say, okay, well, let's just do it again in 2 weeks because it worked. It makes it hard to do that.
Yeah. So, you know, I think that was a good little experiment. It's still running this weekend. We'll see how it turns out. But just real quick, you know, before we got to hop off, I'm actually writing an article that I'll put out next week about this. But I know that a lot of listeners to this, like we're all working on stuff. We're working on getting a product off the ground, get that traction and figure out the right direction, get to that product market fit, that elusive product market fit, right? And so with Ops Calendar, you know, I talked last week about some of the technical challenges that we've been having, and those are still there. And very much like you, like we had to revert back to an earlier version because the new updates just caused way too many bugs. And I was faced with this thing where it's like, you know, we're probably going to need to rebuild most of it, if not all of it. So I don't want to invest in building new features on our existing app, right? So then I came to this conclusion of like, all right, well, if it's going to be rebuilt, might as well address some product market fit issues. Like, you know, we have some paying customers, but we've had some cancellations, and I'm really trying to get to the bottom of that. And also trying to really dial in, like, where is the bulk of my audience, and like, where is their need? And is that really aligned with the problem that Ops Calendar exactly solves? I don't know about that. So there's a lot of questions up in the air, right?
And you're asking the right questions, though. Well, what do people actually want and need and are willing to pay for?
Yeah. And you know, I think I talked about how the Ops Calendar product kind of merges together a lot of different things that they do work together, like the content planning, the social media scheduling, but also the checklists and processes and automation and team delegation. And so folks who know me, like I'm like a process freak, and systems and audience ops basically runs like a machine and all this stuff. Like, so I'm trying to figure out like where the really useful parts are for my people and which people are interested in the other stuff. Like there's a lot of questions and I don't have all the answers yet. So yeah, when I get into one of these cycles, I've been through this before and it has paralyzed me. It just stops all progress for too long of a period. So my goal is just to get some decision made on a plan so that I can keep moving forward.
You know? So help me understand, like define what you mean by like get into one of these phases. Is it like a doubt phase or like a relook or like a...
Yeah, doubt, product market fit. Why did a bunch of customers cancel in the last few weeks? If we're going to rebuild it, what should we build exactly? What shouldn't we build?
So you don't want that to take too long before you go to the next iteration, the next hypothesis or
experiment. Yeah. Because there've been cycles where I had those same sorts of doubts in previous years where I spent a month, 2-3 months just going back and forth of should I do this or should I do that? I've learned from those cycles that the key is to talk to customers.
Yeah, go faster, talk, faster, yeah, circles.
Talk to customers, get more feedback, look at certain data points and talk to advisors. And that's been my full-time job for the past week and it will be for the next week. Specifically, what I've done is first, I just looked at the data before I started talking, just looked at metrics, looked at every customer message that I received, like reasons for cancellations. I installed, what is it called? Lucky Orange, which records screen recordings of users in the app. I started watching some of those, which I installed it and I was like, oh, actually people are using it more than I thought. And then I did reach out to customers. So far, just in the past few days, I've had about 3 or 4 calls. And actually right now I need to hop off because I've got a couple more customer calls this afternoon.
Nice. All right. So you're doing it. You're pushing.
Yeah. Just picking the brain, like trying to get out of my own head. I've been writing plenty of notes myself, but I'm just trying to have conversations, talk about what do your workflows look like? What tools are you using? which ones do you like? What features are useful? Which features are do you wish you had, not useful? Stuff like that. Right now, I'm crafting a really big survey to send to basically everyone. I'm going to send it to my list. I'm going to send it to Ops Calendar users. I'm going to send it to everyone. And I've spent a lot of time just crafting those questions. I'll probably send that out on Monday. And then I've been going to my mastermind group and to a couple of different friends, advisors, and trying to get their takes on what I should do next. And I have a couple of different options, a couple ideas that I'm excited about. No firm answers yet, but I think the more that I talk to people, the clearer that'll get. And then I'm just hoping, you know, I won't spend more than another week or two before I just decide and then just go, you know.
I'm very interested to see where that goes. It's almost like we look at our history and we think there's no way we would have gotten to the product we're at now if we didn't start with the cart abandonment product, right? But at some point we had to ask ourselves, do we really want to build a second product and take on that risk, or do we want to keep pushing with what you're doing? It sounds very analogous to what you're doing, right? Push or pivot. If it's the same audience and they already know you and trust you and talk to you, then at least you have a much better chance of getting what they find most useful, right? Right? Coming at the market cold, your chances of nailing it are just reduced.
I really feel the advantage that I have of being able to send off a few emails, just personal one-to-one emails to just random people in my audience and have calls booked this week to talk to them, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's the power of people that like you and trust you. You know, some people, we see them once they're successful, it feels like everything they do is successful. And it's because it's a buildup from one thing to the next that you bring in all these advantages. Brandon's always a great example with Right Message because he did that for himself and it worked. And then he showed other people how to do it and it works for them too. And then you're onto something that is a solution that drives ROI. It's not like a guess.
A lot of the people in my audience who come to my newsletter and the productized course and whatnot is they're trying to grow. They've been consultants or they've been agencies and they're trying to really scale up, double, triple their capacity and sell a product or a productized service. But they've had a challenge with being able to hire people and challenged with delegating and being able to hire managers. And a lot of the feedback is like, well, I just haven't found the right people that I could hire or we're not ready financially to hire people. But I believe really the underlying problem is like you don't have the systems and processes in place to be able to be ready to hire people. Because I've been through that. It's a little bit of like give them what they need or give them what they want. And I'm trying to figure out those questions, you know?
Yeah, that's tricky. If you approach me, I look at that and then I say, well, the process is secondary. And then in reality, it's not. But what I want is the person to take care of it first.
Right.
Yep. Yeah. Tricky.
Well, yeah. So that's it, buddy.
Cool. Well, it'll be exciting to see what you learn from these conversations. And I will have an update next week on whether I cried through next week or celebrated.
Yep.
Wish me luck.
Awesome, buddy. Have a good weekend.
You too, man.
All right. See you. Yeah.